Welcome to Green Connections Radio, where we are talking innovation with movers and shakers in the energy and sustainability space. These leaders come from all sectors: government, business, academia, advocacy, the arts, and the media. Some are entrepreneurs and some are authors. I'm Joan Michelson. You benefit from my extensive network of C-level executives and transformers and my many years in the media and Fortune 500 companies. Find us online on greenconnectionsradio.com, iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn, and Stitcher, and all kinds of other places that I keep finding randomly as I go on the web. I'm like, suddenly I'm there. So it's kind of cool. So if you just search Green Connections Radio, we should pop up. We are here, speaking of iHeartRadio, at our new iHeartRadio studio in Rockville, Maryland. Thank you, iHeartRadio. This is the season for travel. How many of you are planning to travel for Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever holiday you like to celebrate at the end of the year? How many of you are choosing where to go based on sustainable options or sustainable destinations or hotels that have sustainable amenities? Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. We have the perfect person to talk to about it. We have the CEO of Sustainable Travel International, Jeff Bolin, joining us by phone from Seattle, Washington. Welcome to Green Connections Radio, Jeff.
Thank you, Joan. It's nice to be here.
Thank you. Let us start out with, you did this great research recently, which is really fascinating to me. But let's start out with defining what is sustainable tourism and what is a sustainable traveler.
We don't think of sustainable travel separately from the notion of sustainability, right? And sustainability in our minds is focused on the fact that there are resources, natural and other resources, that are finite, they're limited. And there's a question of how does one enjoy or use resources now in a way that satisfies current needs, but also satisfies future needs. That can be fish, that can be water, that can be reefs and forests. It can be cultural understandings. So it's really a question of how do we use and enjoy the things around us and make sure that they're going to be existing for generations to come. And that applies in our world very, very succinctly to tourism.
Well, and I would pose it too, and full disclosure, Jeff and I met at a conference this week. And one of the things we talked about was that a lot of those natural resources are the very draws to that region. So you, speaking of reefs, you had mentioned that if the coral reefs disintegrate, then they will no longer be a draw for tourists to go to that area, right?
Exactly. I mean, if you want to go to Machu Picchu and see the ruins, if they are truly ruined, that's not going to be such a hot destination to go to. And the same applies to reefs. We have a large program working with the Mesoamerican Reef, the second largest reef system in the globe after the Australia's Great Barrier Reef. And ultimately, water and waste and mechanical interactions and others lead to a degraded reef. If you're interested in snorkeling and if you're interested in seeing marine wildlife, if you're interested in that, and it's not available, you will not go there. So it's we believe there's a direct link between those things. If the water's polluted, why will you swim? You won't. If you're surrounded by trash, if the area is not cared for, those are directly in conflict with what we believe people are looking to experience when they travel.
Well, to that point, climate change and whether those reefs survive and those waterways remain clear is not only up to the destination itself. I mean, we saw this most clearly in Rio with the Olympics, where that water was just horrible and people actually got sick and Olympians got sick. And so they could take some direct control over that water. But a lot of times, you know, it's the coral reefs, for example, you know, how much control do the Australians have over those reefs directly, and how much of this is at the mercy of agreements like the Paris Accord, where you have multiple countries coming together to solve the problem? Because obviously, we all breathe the same air.
But I would still make the argument that a lot of what we're trying to promote is the notion of local action and individual action. And when I say individual, I don't necessarily mean an individual person, but the actions of one hotel or the actions of one restaurant or one tour operator or one local government agency can have an effect. And it can have a significant effect because people don't tend to work and companies don't tend to work in isolation. And we've seen this all around the globe. So the success or failure is not, did I get one person to change their habits and therefore there's a direct impact on climate change, the risk of climate change. It is that movement that really makes a difference. And that's why we focus on destinations and working with interested parties and different stakeholders throughout these destinations, not just one company. And that's why we try and take the lessons from one destination and bring them to other places, because everybody wants their job to be easier. And if you can learn from your neighbors, all the better. And what we see also is not only the environmental benefits of working together and benefits on the planet, but the financial benefits for these same companies. When you use less water, it costs you less money. When you use less energy, it costs you less money. When you have employees leading this effort, they are more engaged. That means they're happier. That means they're more likely to stay and more likely to be productive. And so we tend to try and focus on the wins on many fronts.
Mm-hmm. So are there hotels that do this particularly well and that have a bigger share, perhaps, of what you would call the sustainable traveler or the traveler who makes decisions based on sustainability factors?
Well, I mean, I think that the general answer is yes, and it's not just a hotel issue, right? It's in our lens of the world through travel and tourism, you're addressing the whole spectrum of kinds of companies that are out there, and so you would see, and you can see this in almost any destination, the boutique hotel that has its offerings versus maybe a more mass market hotel, which has its approach. That's reflected in price, quality, experience, et cetera. And so you see all of that from when in the research that we did, which wasn't specific to any hotel or any tour operator. It was really consumer-oriented research. The data demonstrates that people that are, you can kind of put in quotes, sustainability travelers, or sustainable travelers, and that's, again, going back to the early part of the conversation, that can be a general term, but people with those characteristics and interested in certain criteria are in fact spending more money and traveling for longer, right? So translation, they're worth more. Comparing A to B, they are worth more to attract than the more mass market traveler. And so that's a decision that each hotel or each operator, each travel company, each business needs to make. But the data suggests that by attracting a sustainable traveler or offering the right proper criteria and benefits or features and amenities, you will be better off as a business.
Okay, so what you're driving at, and I think I saw this, I think I got this right, is that 60% of travelers have taken what we're calling or you're calling a sustainable trip in the past 3 years, and they spent about $600 more per trip. That's not per person, mm-hmm. I gather. That's per trip. And they stayed Correct. About 3 days longer than those who did not choose based on sustainable options. Mm-hmm. What, when you say choosing sustainable options, I mean, what can you define, like, what would that be? Do they search on the hotel or the destination's website for our green footprint or what we're doing to save the planet or whatever their environmental page is? I mean, is that measured in website pages? I mean, how is that actually determined that they're making that choice? Because we don't really know.
Right. I think there are several questions in there. At least one of them speaks to one of the challenges we're trying to tackle. But the question of how to determine is, you know, what makes someone a sustainable traveler? And the first thing I want to say is, in some respects, and I've said this to many people, you can replace sustainable for a few different terms. And I say that because what we're seeing in the movements of the travel industry, both on the supply side, so what operators and hotels and destinations are putting together, and certainly on the consumer side is, and for that matter, even in a non-travel sense, we see that in our own communities. What are people asking for when they're buying products and they're going to restaurants? They're interested in where is it from, and how does this affect, you know, how does this affect me and what's around me? You walk into a restaurant and it says, these products are from these local farms or from these suppliers. They are your neighbors. And so this notion of sustainable and local and experience, and really I think that's what people are looking for, and that's what we're hearing more and more in relation to consumers is, and this I think gets to the question of, well, what is a sustainable traveler? And then onto the how do you respond to them in a moment. But what you're having is people that are looking for a deeper experience. right? And an experience, a deeper experience, can be a lot of things. It can be the experience having time with locals, understanding where coffee actually comes from. It doesn't come from a store. The chickens and eggs, wildlife, community projects, and so that's what we're starting to, or not starting, but we're definitely starting to see that more and more in travel and in the consumer side of things. So when you start adding in pieces like, are you interested, or are you looking for how does a company work with local nonprofits? Does it have a community action plan? Does it have a wildlife interaction policy? Do you hire locals? How many families are working with you? Do you have a plan around pollution and water? Those are the kinds of issues that people are interested in. Your second question is, well, how do you figure all this out?
Hang on, let me before we get to that, let me just ask you a follow on to that, what you just said.
Sure.
I'm a little confused because I know that this research that is really quite interesting. I was astonished to see that they answered, that you had about 2,500 people answer 40 questions, which is quite remarkable to get people to answer. So good for you on that. But I go into a restaurant and I read a menu and nobody is in my head looking to see what pages I'm looking at and whether I'm noticing whether they have local or sustainable fish or organic produce. I'm just processing that in my head. So
sure.
How do you measure that? How can you say that people are asking more for that when our average listener or me or you or somebody else just goes into a restaurant and reads what they read and they don't actually talk about it? They make a decision that nobody really knows because it's all mental.
Sure. Fair question. But if you take those same people and survey them and say, what's important in decision-making around a restaurant or on travel, and they answer across a criteria, and obviously price comes in there some way, and certainly quality comes in there. What you're starting to see is that people are asking and looking for these actual characteristics. And so while you can, the principal flaw in any market research is someone answering the question to the, honestly and to their real inner truth, that's something we can debate forever. But when we conducted the survey and asked people straight away, what are you looking for in your experience? These are the things they said they're looking for. When you have 83% of the people saying, they're interested in helping conserve natural areas and wildlife, right? And 81% saying they're, looking for companies or opportunities that minimize pollution of air, water, and land. You to a certain extent, you have to take people at face value that's actually what they're looking for. Then you can somewhat statistically and somewhat anecdotally, you have to kind of apply that to what's actually happening in the real world. Who's doing well, right? Who is doing well? And why are they, what is it that company or that area is offering that's different than another area? So who's doing well? Companies like, a company like G Adventures, who has, they're constantly pushing the envelope on what kind of local and natural and unique experience can be offered. And so what happens? They're growing. They're growing gangbusters because they seem to, they, like a few others, have captured that what's the next thing. And it's not just the next, but it's engaging with local communities and it's helping to support family-run enterprises. And instead of hotels, maybe it's homestays. It's really that experience. And it's people voting and saying, what's important to us is these set of characteristics.
There are some people who think that the primary sustainable traveler right now is millennials, that they're asking more for this stuff, but they don't really have the disposable income to do a lot of travel right now. I mean, some of it is still backpacking and things like that. And yes, they're probably more likely to ask about those things because they're more focused on climate change right now, and they're rightfully so because it's their generation that's inheriting it, right? But the people who are older than that, like baby boomers and whatever the age group is called of, say, 40 and up, are the ones who really have the income and the wherewithal to do some of this travel. So
sure.
That's why
I was
curious.
I can tell you in sort of basic terms is sustainable travelers do tend to be younger, right? You're spot on.
Oh, they do. Okay.
They do tend to be younger, so about 40, 45, 46% are, so the Gen Y,
okay.
Right? But about a third of them, or a third of baby boomers, right? So, I think you need to consider the fact that if I'm a business, and having run businesses, I understand this, that if I'm a business, part of it is where am I making my money now, and part of it is where are people going, right? And there's some interesting study out there, and I'm sure you've heard of it, that the millennials, where are they spending their money? They're not spending their money on things. They're spending their money on experiences. That's a real shift. And so travel isn't a thing. It is very much an experience. So I think you have that, and then I think it's important to look out and say, I give you one example, but so what's the growing travel trend out there? And granted, it does take some dollars for many people, but why are National Geographic associated trips booming?
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because they now have those unique lodges of the world, and I'm actually going to be interviewing them soon too. How did those? I mean, those are very high end, right? Those are those are definitely for the high income brackets. Sure. I wanted to ask about that. What is the breakdown of sustainable travel vis-a-vis the price point? Because as you just said, millennials are the ones who are, this is particularly important to, and they're very strong in this area, but they have less money, and the other population you said that is doing it a lot, baby boomers, have a lot of money, or generally have a lot of money. Generalization.
Sure.
Well, so how does...
I mean, to put it in some basic terms or some statistical terms, the household income between, let's say, the sustainable travelers and all other travelers, that gap is less than $4,000. Now, no one should sneeze at any amount of money, but that gap is not significant.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think there's
a certain amount of there's always some self-definition that goes on in a discussion like this. So sustainability doesn't mean the same exact thing to the same person, right? And I think I have to be honest, I think that that one's definitions and generalizations are often a bit crushed by where you travel.
So well, that was my
the
next
Mountain West,
exactly. That was my next question, was how much of this is place specific? I mean, where are there regions internationally included where sustainable travelers are tending to go to more frequently than not? I mean, one might think that places like the Great Barrier Reef or safaris in Africa are more focused on natural resources than going to visit a city like Shanghai, but or Hong Kong, for example, or even New York for that matter. But tell me what your research said. Are there places that the sustainable traveler tends to go more than others?
The answer is sustainable travelers go everywhere. Travel the globe and travel domestically. But I think that the distinction is, what are they looking for when they get there? There are absolutely destinations which align more in terms of brand and reputation with what might say sustainability, right? I mean, historically, Costa Rica, right? Big, one of the birthplaces, so to speak, of active ecotourism. So people, when think of ecotourism, nature tourism, will think of Costa Rica. And that's, which gets into another area of sometimes overly loved places. Yosemite and Yellowstone versus Cascades National Park or versus Olympic National Park, and I'm citing a couple places out here in Washington State. One's not prettier than the other, one's not better than the other, but there's certainly a disparity between volumes of visits. What are people looking for? They're getting out to nature. So I think, what's hot in terms of destinations is not necessarily the same as what are people looking for. Why are people going to certain places for sustainability? And so you can have it in Vietnam, you can have it in Thailand, you can have it in Montana, you can have it in Florida, and you can have it in other areas. This is not unique to, I must go to an eco lodge there to make that the only way that I'm being a sustainable traveler.
Well, so again,
it goes
back
that way.
Right. It goes back to what you said about people wanting an experience. They don't necessarily, they're going to choose the kind of experience they want, and then they may find the destination or the place they go to based on the kind of experience they want.
Absolutely.
So I want to ask a couple questions about you, because we like to also address a few things to help folks who want careers in this area. You said you came into this space. You've been a businessman, obviously, for a while. So tell us about how you got into by the way, congratulations on your new job, because I understand you were made CEO fairly recently.
Thanks.
Us about your trajectory briefly and maybe what you would suggest for folks who want to be you when they grow up.
I've never actually heard someone say they wanted to be me in this sort of shop, but we'll start with that one. The general advice I give to give to people is it is your story, so tell it honestly, but tell your story. I guess in life I've experienced that things, as much as you might hope sometimes and presume, they're linear, they're entirely not. I started my career working in a nonprofit at a place called Conservation International. I did conservation and market development work. So in many respects, not terribly different from where I am today, working with rainforest products, working with ecotourism development. And I spent a fair bit of time doing that, spent a fair bit of time in the private sector. Really, my goal was to understand how the private sector engaged with businesses and how sustainability and how conservation and how environmental and social issues were addressed on the private sector side. I mean, ultimately, in looking back, I'd say my plan, I followed the plan at the time. I'm not sure how clear of thought it was. At least for me, it's always been, how do I get my heart racing, right? And what's meaningful to me? And if it's meaningful for someone to be a gardener, that's great. If it's someone like you in communications and journalism, and that's what gets the blood racing, I think that's where you have to go. And so I think, my advice is, I don't know that people should want to be me or not want to be me. I think people should be themselves, but be honest and true with what excites them. And I think at the same time, it's important to also think you can reinvent yourself. If you've been a teacher for 10 years, which is a tremendously positive and wonderful and successful profession, be that. And if you decide one day that I want to go out and sell insurance or run a coffee shop or be with an NGO or become a banker and that's what's going to get you excited, go for it. I think that's the pathway of the world.
Oh, I think that's great. And that really goes to fulfillment too. You know, I mean, when you're right, when you're fulfilled at what you're doing, you can get through the hard days. And I think that's great. Well,
don't do things you know. It's too easy to repeat the things you know, and no one really ever learned by success. So I think failure makes us stronger, but no one ever learned by success. And then when you get over that hump, it's pretty darn satisfying.
So stretch yourself. Stretch beyond what you think you can do.
Definitely beyond the comfort zone.
Cool. I love that. Well, I've stretched my comfort zone so much I moved it, actually, I think, a few hundred times. So thank you. That's a great line to end on. So thank you so much, Jeff Boland, CEO of Sustainable Travel International. I really appreciate you joining us today on Green Connections Radio. So what did you hear Jeff say? Have you chosen a trip based on sustainability lately, or do you plan to? Tell us three words to describe what you think of as sustainable travel, or maybe what you would look for in sustainable travel. Post it to us on Twitter at Joan Michelson or on our Facebook page, and please like the page while you're there. Or write it to us on iTunes when you leave us a review, and please subscribe to our podcast on iTunes while you're there. Find us also on greenconnectionsradio.com, TuneIn, Stitcher, and of course iHeartRadio as we talk from our iHeartRadio studio in Rockville, Maryland. I'm Joan Michelson. Thank you for joining us. See you next time.
Hi, my name is David Goldberg, president of Edge Studio, a voiceover company. We oversee professional narrators and voice actors for sales videos, training videos, telephone pre-recorded systems, commercials, web videos, and all applications requiring voiceover. And in fact, for over 20 years and in over 100 languages, we have been considered the most trusted and the friendliest leader in the voiceover industry. We're a green company with efforts towards sustainability at all of our studio locations. EdgeStudio.com. Sound people who are happy to help.